The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe. And before we get started with our wonderful guest, I want to mention that I've just updated my website. So if you go there and you'd like to receive some free information either about weight loss or about the basic needs of your child, just explore the website. You go on the first page or on the contact page and you'll see where you can get that free information. Today we're talking about running on empty, recovering from emotional neglect. And as a society, we're concerned about the trauma of childhood abuse or spousal abuse witnessed by children, about bullying, about parental neglect where kids are left on their own with little direction or attention to their basic physical needs. All of these adverse experiences impact our kids into adulthood, and they require conscious effort for recovery and public awareness to reduce their occurrence. But what about when none of these obvious, more obvious things have occurred and yet a person still feels not good enough or strangely alone or unconnected from others? My guest this week on Family First is Dr. John S. Webb, who has identified and investigated this more subtle kind of abuse, which can go completely unidentified and still have profound effects on the person and on the loved ones around them. She felt compelled to draw awareness to the problem and has as her goal to bring this unseen force from childhood out of the darkness and into the light. And I think she's done it with her book. She seeks to make people aware of it and its effects and to give them the words to talk about it and the tools to fix it. Jonas Webb has been a licensed psychologist since 1991. She's worked in a variety of different settings over the course of her career, including a psychiatric emergency service and substance abuse programs. She's been the director of several large outpatient clinics. For the past 8 years, she's been running her own private practice in Lexington, Massachusetts. Dr. Webb specializes in the treatment of couples and families. During 2 decades of practicing psychology, Dr. Webb discovered a factor from childhood which weighs upon people as adults, and it's extremely subtle. In fact, it's so difficult to see that it goes virtually unnoticed while it quietly saps a person's joy in life, causing him and her or her to struggle with self-discipline or to feel disconnected and unfulfilled. She gave a name to this invisible factor from one's childhood, which she calls emotional neglect, which is a perfect name for it. Her book is Running on Empty, which is the way many adults feel who have this in their childhood. Overcome Your Childhood Emotional Neglect. And the book was just released in October. And welcome to Family First, Dr. Webb. I just explained that you really noticed this in your practice with families and couples and parents. So what brought you to write this book, Running on Empty?
I really wanted to call attention to it. All those things that you were listing in your introduction about, you know, things that happen to people that have to be dealt with. If you think about all the things that can go wrong in a person's childhood as a coin, all of those things are on the top of the coin. And I'm trying to draw attention to the other side of the coin, to things that didn't happen in a person's childhood but have an equally damaging effect, but more of an erosion. So that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, that makes so much sense because often we say, well, he didn't beat me or she didn't yell at me. And all of a sudden, the problems you have, there doesn't seem to be a reason. But it's things that didn't happen, not things that did, that can cause these problems. So can you tell us more about what is childhood emotional neglect and why it's so hard for people to realize that it happened to them or is happening in their family?
Childhood emotional neglect, the definition is it's a parent's failure to respond enough to a child's emotional needs. So you can see from the definition that it's not something a parent does to a child. It's something that a parent fails to do for a child. And that's why it's so difficult to remember or to even see it when it's happening. I always say 50 people could be watching an incident of emotional neglect occur and have no idea that it's happening. And the child certainly doesn't know and the parent doesn't know. An example would be a child clearly having an emotion that needs, and the child needs to be helped with that emotion and the parent doesn't notice it. So that's not an event. That's not something that people would normally take note of. But yet, if it happens enough over a child's, over a person's childhood, they are getting a clear message from their parent that their emotions don't matter, that their feelings are irrelevant, or sometimes it even goes to a point that of getting the message that your feelings are unacceptable.
That's so important. My husband brought to me an article in the New York Times this week about a study where it was a longitudinal study of a number of lifetimes of a number of people, and they said that emotional health turned out to be the best predictor of success in life and longevity. And yet it was the ability to recognize emotions and to relate to people intimately. So people think, well, an authoritarian parent is usually the one who cuts off emotion and, you know, don't be a crybaby kind of thing. But you're saying that that's not the only kind of person that can be emotionally neglectful.
No, not at all. In my book, I talk about 12 different types of parents who are most likely to emotionally neglect their children. Authoritarian is one type, but it can also be a parent who is depressed or a parent who has an addiction or a parent who has an ill family member, a parent who is grieving. It can be a narcissistic parent who's too taken up with their own concerns. But, and there are some others that I talk about in the book, but the biggest group that I've seen are what I call the well-meaning but neglected themselves parents, the WMBNP parent. These are the parents who really love their children and care about them and want their children to have the best possible life and do everything they can, but they were emotionally neglected themselves in some way. So, which they don't remember and they're not aware of. So they end up passing those blind spots from their own emotional neglect down to their own children without knowing it. So many people who have this feeling of being disconnected or empty or struggling in adulthood who look back on their childhood for an explanation see a pretty good childhood. And then they have no explanation for why they're not happier, why they're not enjoying life more, and why they don't feel more connected to people. Oftentimes, they end up blaming themselves because there's no other explanation for it. So it must be there's something wrong with me. And I've seen this pattern over and over and over in so many people.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying when parents don't even, I mean, adults don't realize what they were missing. And they don't have the skills or the language to fill that gap for their own children. They don't even know it's missing, and that's such a terrible trap. So
right.
what would be the symptoms or behaviors that are common in adults who experience this emotional neglect from their childhood?
One of the biggest ones is that study that you were talking about that. There have been several studies now on emotional intelligence, which is basically a person's emotional IQ, how much a person knows about emotion and understands it and can read it in other people and in themselves and can talk about emotion. That's called emotional intelligence. And people who have a high emotional intelligence, like your study that you were talking about said, tend to be more successful in life, in work, and in every area of life. And people who are emotionally neglected in childhood often have problems in the area of emotional intelligence. Because we get it from our parents. If our parents don't teach us what emotions are, that they matter, what to do with them, that they're okay, and how to use them and how to manage them, then we grow up not really knowing how to do that for ourselves. Doesn't mean we can't learn it, but if you don't have it, you also have a really hard time seeing that you don't have it, because it sort of takes emotional awareness to see that you don't have emotional awareness. So it's a bit of a catch-22.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest ones that concerns me.
Right. So if someone comes to you being kind of depressed and feeling disconnected and they're very successful or their family's working out just fine and they feel unfulfilled, then this is something that you would really want to explore with them. Is that how you would proceed in
definitely.
Counseling?
Yep. And I see a whole pattern of symptoms within a person, but some people have just one or two. I think it depends in what areas you are emotionally neglected. Some people are emotionally neglected across the board as children, and other people it might be in just one area. So it can look different. Like emotional intelligence is just one of the possible results of emotional neglect. But others are struggles with self-discipline. For example, if your parents, when you're growing up, don't teach you how to manage, let's take for example, your eating. If they don't, they might provide you with plenty of food, and that's not a problem, but they don't teach you when to eat and how much to eat and how to eat and what to eat. And they just kind of leave you to your own devices, or because maybe they don't know themselves. When you grow up, you're going to have a struggle with food. And when you look back, you'll think, well, my parents were great. They gave me all the food I needed. It was healthy in the house. There's no excuse for me to have a problem. And then you can get really angry at yourself and blame yourself. So that's another example. But
yeah,
also,
for sure.
Oh, go ahead.
It seems like sometimes it's a catch-22 where you don't want people to not take responsibility for their behaviors, but you'll also want them to realize where their dysfunction came from, their bad habits of dealing with food, to continue with that example. You want them to take responsibility for their decisions, but at the same time, it can help them to realize where the failing was in their childhood.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance between recognizing that you didn't cause this for yourself, but that you're responsible now for fixing it.
Right.
So it's not a matter of blame. There's, you know, maybe your parents were probably doing the best they could. So it's not a matter of blaming your parents and letting yourself off the hook. It's more a matter of seeing how this occurred in the first place. And once you stop blaming yourself, it frees up a lot of energy to actually attack it.
So you feel more empowered because you know this isn't just an innate flaw in you.
Right. It makes sense suddenly. It's like, oh, so that's why I have such a struggle with this. And then you can use the worksheets in the book to try to fix it.
Very cool. You have a wonderful chart of hundreds of names of feelings, and it's just delightful to give people that kind of chance to explore the feelings that maybe their parents didn't let them express and they didn't even know they were allowed to express them now as adults. So how do you encourage, what is that process that you get them to start dialoguing about feelings when they basically grew up thinking their feelings didn't matter?
Yeah, the first step is getting them to recognize that their feelings do matter. Do you notice in our society that a lot of people laugh about emotional things and make fun of,
For sure.
It's not very popular sometimes to talk about emotion or to show emotion. But so the first step is getting emotionally neglected people to recognize that emotion is a biological part of who they are, and it's an important part, and it has to be dealt with, and that there's nothing wrong with it. It's normal and healthy. So another thing that I see often in emotionally neglected people is that they blame themselves for simply having emotions. And so just interrupting that cycle is the first thing. Starting to recognize what emotions are and getting the words for it is a step, but recognizing when you're having an emotion and putting those words to it is really the beginning.
That's fascinating. Jonas, I'm thinking of so much of what goes on the internet is kind of reactive. People are having angry or hurt emotions, but they don't even identify that they are feeling this. The other guy is the bad guy. A lot of kids are getting into this back and forth, like calling each other names instead of realizing what their emotion is and dealing with it in a constructive way. Do you find that comes up from time to time where people are angry they're angry at someone, so they focus on the object instead of their feeling?
Yeah, and I find that the people who do that most are the people who are, you know, the bullies at school often are the kids who are bullied at home. So
right.
That's kind of the opposite side of the coin. It's kids who are being treated poorly somehow, and then they treat others poorly. Or they're being blamed at home, so they blame others. Right?
So you think that's the way you deal with things.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
What is the link with suicidal feelings? With someone who, you know, seems outwardly together, but they're so depressed or angry at themselves that they're feeling suicidal?
I think it's a combination of the feelings that emotional neglect causes are, you know, this feeling of emptiness, which a lot of people describe as, people describe it several different ways, being set apart and isolated, so very alone, and numb, like having no feelings, just kind of a numbness. And also, because they have no explanation for why they're suffering this way, as we talked about, they blame themselves for that. So it's self-directed anger added into that. So it's a combination of those three things all working together, and it forms this cycle where a person just starts to really dislike themselves and blame themselves. And the feeling of numbness and emptiness can be very intolerable when it's really severe. You know, in milder forms, people can live forever with it and never say a word to anyone about it. But when it's so isolating and so such an empty feeling, I've seen it really be strong enough to cause people to wish that they were dead or have fantasies of being dead and having suicidal thoughts. So that's how I think it all fits together.
Yeah, so that's the ultimate damage from emotional neglect in childhood. And if they don't know where it comes from or why it is, then they don't have any sense of how to fix it. So I hope.
Right. I think, you know, when people are abused or mistreated, often, you know, that's a terrible thing to experience in childhood, and it does terrible damage to a lot of people. But once you grow up, you can look back and say, this happened to me. And it gives you an explanation for why you're having trouble trusting people or why you have depression or why you have low self-esteem. You do have some explanation. So I think that's what makes emotional neglect so insidious, is because it's so hard to see, and it leaves people just feeling very alone and very confused.
Dr. Webb, we're up on our first break now, so listeners, stay tuned. Dr. Webb has a lot more to share about how to deal with the results of emotional neglect in childhood. So stay tuned.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/VoiceAmerica or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What of thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. Feel free to call in if you want to ask questions of Dr. Webb. We're speaking with Dr. Janice Webb, who has written a wonderful book called Running on Empty, Overcome Your Childhood Emotional Neglect. And unfortunately, many people who have strange unidentified feelings of inadequacy or disconnectedness can relate to, if they learn about it, can relate to the idea that there was something that didn't happen in their childhood. It's not about some aggressive, nasty things that happened, but rather a failure of their parents to recognize their emotions and honor them. And we've been talking about exactly what that is and how to identify it, some of the symptoms, and her book goes into great detail. There's really 12 types of parents that may do these neglectful thing, neglecting emotions without realizing it. It's not because they're trying to hurt the child or don't care. Most often it's because they weren't taught about emotions in their own childhood. So getting back to what we were talking about, Dr. Webb, there's a lot of emptiness. We were talking about even suicidal feelings where people just don't understand and think there's something desperately wrong with them, that they're not relating to others. And so what are some of the self-nurturing behaviors that people can explore to help them reconnect with their emotions?
Well, first I'll just say that by no stretch does everyone who's emotionally neglected feel suicidal at all. It's just a small group. So I just wanted to mention that. But the self-nurturing part, it really goes back to how you were nurtured as a child, because I've seen that, and, you know, this is borne out by lots and lots of studies on parent-child interaction, that how children are treated really determines how they treat themselves as adults. So if you grow up in a household where you weren't, there was some hole in your cell, in the amount of care that you received or the type of care, you probably are going to have to struggle with that particular area as an adult. And one of the ways that people oftentimes are neglected, emotionally neglected in childhood, is putting their own needs, prioritizing their own needs. So, for example, if you grew up in a household with 20, not 20, that's too many, seven, mm-hmm. eight kids, or, you know, too many kids, more kids than the parents could handle, then the parents may get tired at some point and just kind of shuffle the kids through. This is just an example. And if your parents aren't paying attention to your own individual needs and you're being treated as part of a group, then when you grow up, you're likely to have difficulty knowing what your own needs are or feeling that they matter. And for whatever reason it happened in childhood, it kind of doesn't matter. If it happened to you in childhood, then in adulthood, you'll need to learn that your what you need does matter. So there's it does take some effort as an adult to teach yourself how to put your own needs first, because after all, who else is going to put your needs first? Each person has to put their own first so that they can be present for other people. Another thing that people who are emotionally neglected often have trouble with is learning to say no and not feeling guilty about it. If you weren't really allowed to say no very much as a kid, then it feels wrong to do it as an adult. So there are lots of people walking around feeling like if they're asked to do something, they need to say yes, and they unless they have a really good excuse. And so in the book, I have some, I call them change sheets in the book, where you actually target, there are five skills. The others are asking for help and learning what your likes and dislikes are and prioritizing your own enjoyment. There are change sheets for targeting each of those, and not everybody has all of those, but figuring out which ones apply to you and then really trying to work on those separately.
Yeah, Janice, I thought that was so wonderful, the saying no change sheet to record the number of times you say no each day. I've talked with people who you know, haven't said no in a month. So that's really a powerful reminder, just the chart itself, that it's okay to say no. And when you have a parent who didn't let you ever say no, and then the child gets angry and or has some other negative emotion, they feel sad, or don't pout. I remember hearing that. Don't pout. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm pouting because I have a reason, you know. So when you have when the parents have treated some emotions as bad, I know a gentleman wrote a book called Cheerful Money, that if they had a cheerful expression on their face all the time, they'd get extra money. They weren't allowed to have bad emotions. So isn't it true that
we get more allowance?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. That's a perfect example of emotional neglect.
Yeah, it's a wonderful novel called Cheerful Money. But this bad, well, it's actually semi-autobiographical but by the author. But the bad emotion, if you're suppressing your bad emotions, then you're going to think all emotions are bad, because that's just, isn't that the way the body works, that you suppress one emotion, the others don't work so well either.
Yeah, I think that happens often. I think some people actually suppress their negative emotion, and they are very upbeat and positive all the time and happy and laughing. Probably everyone knows someone like that. And really, these people typically are lovely, and you want to be with them because they're fun and they're upbeat, but they are paying a big price for that, because they are suppressing their anger and their sadness, and all the other side of all of their emotional life gets pushed down, because that's what they were taught to do as a child. And then, as you said, some people just push it all down, because it's just what works for them in childhood. And then they're the ones who feel the most disconnected, I think, as adults.
So true. And you have in your book a paragraph about there is no bad emotion, and that feelings don't always make rational sense, but there's always a good reason they exist. And I just thought that those are such powerful ideas. Can you expand on them a bit?
Sure. as I said a few minutes ago, when people are emotionally neglected, they often really tend to blame themselves for having emotions at all. And so someone who feels, I just have people in my office all the time who say things like, isn't this terrible? But I thought that was, but I got angry. Isn't that terrible? And then I have to stop them and say, wait a minute. Getting angry wasn't terrible. What did you do with that anger? Because that's what matters. You can do something terrible with your anger, or you can do something productive with your anger, or you can put it to side and deal with it later. But anger itself is not terrible. All feelings, they're just there. They just are what they are. They're your body talking, and there's nothing you can do about it except listen to it and accept it and manage it. And
yeah,
the managing part can be pretty tough.
Decide what to do with it. And I love what you said, that it's the body talking to you. If you ignore it, then maybe your anger is going to come out some other nasty way at a friend or a spouse or a child, instead of saying, okay, I'm angry. Why am I angry? What went wrong? What can I do about it? And dealing with it. So, that having the self-discipline not to act out your emotions and ignore them until they become critical, explosive. Can you talk about the aspect of self-discipline that's often lacking? Or sometimes I think it's all the way to the other side. Like you said, some people behave perfectly, but inside they are feeling empty. But let's talk about the self-discipline side.
Yeah, it's, I would call it like emotion management, which is a skill that different people have to different degrees. And if you are lucky enough to grow up with parents who notice what you're feeling and talk to you about it and set appropriate limits, for example, you know, it's not the right thing to let a kid throw a tantrum, you know, for 6 hours just because you want the kid to get their emotions out. You have to step in and try to figure out what's going on and help them manage it. And if the parent does that in the right way, then, which is difficult, but certainly possible, the kid then grows up being able to do that for themselves. But if you have a parent who is either giving you the message that emotions are bad or they're not allowed, or letting you overexpress them, either way, it's not teaching you this vital skill that every adult needs, which is how to let yourself feel what you need to feel, but be aware of it and take control of it instead of letting it control you. Or pushing it away is just another way of letting a feeling control you. Because if you get angry and you just push it down, your body is telling you that you need to do something, and it's not going to just give that up. It's going to store that anger, and like you said, it's going to come out in some other way. Which is, in the book, I offer some examples of how to use anger in the right way. Each emotion that we have is telling us a different thing to do. And if you know what the emotion is telling you, then you can use it to make your life better or to take an action that will help deal with the situation. If you push it down, you're losing the access to that really vital source of information.
So true. In your book, I love that it's so accessible. You're not talking in psychological jargon. It's just, things are really clear, particularly because you share so many stories, both hypothetical stories with Zeke, but also stories from real families that you've dealt with in your practice. And I just wanted to say that helps so much. It's not just a theoretical. You're really giving scripts and dialogues of where a conversation can be emotionally neglectful. Even if you are focusing on the child, you're not saying something that honors his emotions or her emotions.
Right. Yes. It's so complicated because there are so many different ways that emotions come out with a child, and parents have a tough job of figuring out how to handle it and what to do. So the vignettes in the book are a way to try to convey just, you know, some of the infinite different ways that things can go wrong. you know, parents have a tough job. Being one myself, I really sympathize with parents and what they're up against and how difficult it is. But, you know, the good news is it doesn't have to always be perfect, and you don't have to always do it right. You just have to do it right often enough. Just do a good enough job, and your kid will be fine. So I think that's, and also it's fixable. You know, it's not something that's forever damages a child.
Right. I always say that there's always a second chance. If you lying in bed at night saying, oh, I shouldn't have said that, there's always another chance.
Right, exactly.
And you mentioned, you know, you don't have to be perfect. One of the 12 types that can unintentionally be emotionally neglectful is a perfectionist parent who you talked about mirroring. Can you explain that concept? I thought that was fascinating.
Yes, mirroring is what a parent does for a child that helps the child learn who he or she is. So that requires the parent to accurately observe their child and become aware of that child's unique emotional nature and feed it back to the child. So, for example, noticing what a child is good at and what a child has struggled with and feeding that back to the child so that, because children don't, they can't see themselves from the outside. They learn who they are as they grow up by seeing themselves reflected in their parents' eyes. So when a parent observes and understands a child on a deeper level, oh, I know why he did this, or I know why this is happening, and then feeds it back to the child in a caring way, the child is like a little computer that's taking in that information and storing it and saying, oh, okay, I'm a fast reader. Oh, okay, I'm a good hitter on the field, but I'm not so good with catching. You know, there's an infinite number of different pieces of information to feed a child. But when a parent's really, truly seeing their child, they are educating their child too at the same time about who he is. And if you grow up without that, those are the times when you end up struggling with, you know, knowing what your likes and dislikes are, because not only were you not asked, but your parents didn't notice. And so you didn't see it reflected in their eyes and, or coming back from them, and you end up with this kind of blank space in your sense of who you are as an adult. And I've had to work with many adults trying to just figure out who am I, and, you know, really healthy people who are functioning fine, but somewhere they just lack this knowledge of who they are. And it's really because their parents didn't really know them as a unique person when they were growing up.
That's so powerful. And the children learn by mirroring. And it was interesting that you also used the term that parents might get caught in a syndrome where they're actually still looking to their children to tell them whether they're adequate or not, so that you get the vicarious parent. Isn't that true, that they're looking for a reflection of themselves in their children and making demands of their children that may be totally unrelated to their children's skills or passions? Or
yes, you're talking about the narcissistic parent.
Yeah.
Who really sees the child as an extension of the parent. And therefore, just, you know, by definition, a narcissistic parent has trouble seeing who the kid is, because, you know, I'm the parent, it's all about me. And so the parent tries to get his or her own needs met through the kid. And that's also a form, obviously, of emotional neglect, where the child really has to figure out for himself who he is, because according to his parent, he's the parent.
Just a reflection of the parent's adequacy. We're up on our next break, Dr. Webb, so please, listeners, stay tuned. We have more to share about overcoming that childhood emotional neglect, which is so subtle. It's very little recognized, but very powerful for adults and can be repeated when adults become parents. And feel free to call in with any questions to 866-472-5792. And so stay tuned.
Learn more
Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolf has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolf has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolf.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolf. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolf@randyrolf.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking with Janice Webb. She's a licensed psychologist and has worked in a number of different psychiatric and outpatient venues, and also has been in private practice for at least 8 years, and noticed a very subtle form of childhood experience that affects a lot of adults and they don't realize it. And we're talking about what she has labeled emotional neglect, and her book is called Running on Empty, which I think is an expression that a lot of these parents can really identify with, that they just don't have the self-confidence or the power or the sense of self to keep going and feel numb and alone. So we've been talking a lot about how it affects adults and what they can do about it. And I'm all about solutions, but of course you have to find the problem first. So now let's talk, Dr. Webb, about what advice you give to parents who are struggling to provide enough emotional support. And I think that's a really important question today, because so many parents are strapped with either single parenting or separation or taking on extra employment to make ends meet. How do they deal with that time factor and their own baggage?
Time is very important, obviously, spending time with your children. But I really feel like when it comes to emotional neglect, it's not as important. So I think that this actually, the idea of emotional neglect and how not to do it really offers a way that people who don't have much time can still be really good parents to their kids. It doesn't take a lot of time, for example, to, when you're with your child, really connect with that child and find out what's he going through, what's she experiencing, what's happening at school, you know, what's his emotional state, how's he doing, what's important to him right now, how is he growing up, and what can he do now that he couldn't do a month ago. You know, all those things, really noticing your child and being in touch with your child doesn't take a whole lot of time. It's more how you see your child and with the child.
That's such an important point and so reassuring, that it's not just about disciplining or getting them to do their homework. It's about when you are with them, noticing who they are, where they're at. And there's a classic thing that comes up all the time when the kid comes home from school, how was school? And the kid says, oh, fine. And that's the end of the conversation. And the parent breathes a sigh of relief. And, but that's not really where it should stop, right?
Right. Unless it's a teenager, and that's really where it needs to stop, because the teenager is just not open at that moment. You know, it's, which is just another way of noticing, okay, where's my kid at? What does my kid need? And is this the right time for it? Just responding to your kid as they are shows them that you see them, that you understand them. And if you have, for example, a teenager who says, fine, don't ask me again, I'm not talking right now, if you keep hammering away, that could really irritate them and push them away from you. But if it's a 5-year-old who says, fine, then you probably should push. Which is, you know, is partly what makes parenting so complicated, because kids constantly change and need different things. But really, as long as you're in tune with your kid, you're providing them with this really vital piece that they will need as they go through their lives. And it doesn't require a whole lot of time to be in tune with your kid. It just requires sharp perception and observation.
So that's really reassuring to parents that wish they did have more time with their children, but it's putting the emphasis on really being present and observant and responsive. And it starts in early childhood, having that closeness, right? The attachment parenting theory. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, attachment theory goes back to the 1950s, and there have been thousands of studies, well, maybe hundreds, proving that the way that parents interact with infants can be observed in those infants years later when they're adults. It's called attachment theory because it involves a parent's, how well the parent sees even as an infant, sees that infant and responds to the infant's needs. It starts immediately right away at birth and then continues on. And some parents are better at different stages, which is okay, but you really just have to do a good enough job of being connected to your child and seeing your child and responding the way your child needs to. You know, back to it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be enough, and your child will turn out fine.
That's good. I think parents do need reassurance that it's not that you have to lecture them every night about not doing drugs or not being in the wrong crowd. You need to give them the recognition, the noticing, the empowerment through the emotional intelligence. It's brilliant. I wanted to ask about one of the symptoms that you mention in the book is that many adults who were neglected in childhood are much better givers than receivers. And one of your change sheets is wonderful. Ask for help. Record the number of times you ask for help per day. And again, I think that there's many people, especially women, who try to be independent and self-reliant, but sometimes it goes back to that kind of nagging self-blame. Is that right? So can you tell us more about that?
Yes, I think men do it a lot too. I call it counter-dependence in my book, that if you grow up feeling like you can't really go to your parents to ask for help for things, and maybe they never actually say, don't ask me for help, but they just convey because they're so busy or they're taken up with other things or they're not emotionally present themselves, they convey that you're on your own. If you receive that message as a child, as an adult, it actually can feel wrong to ask for help from someone. So there are a lot of emotionally neglected people who have a great deal of trouble just asking for and accepting help. It feels like they're doing something wrong, and they can end up really feeling guilty about it. So that is one of the things that I try to help people with in the book is, number one, recognizing everyone needs help and that it's okay to ask for it, and trying to really you know, count the times you do it and try to increase it gradually, the number of times that you ask for and accept help, and just pushing back those guilt feelings because they're not doing anything for you.
Yeah, that kind of helps explain why so often these people are outwardly successful, because they say, "Oh, give it to Jim, he'll get it done," and
they just go
without asking for help and feeling bad about needing any kind of assistance for their projects.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you have a wonderful section about why your feelings matter and what to do with them, and you talk about self-monitoring your feelings. So, and this is so important in parenting, that you know how you feel before you can really be present for your child. So if you're exhausted from work and irritable, you better know that before you try to interact with your child. Isn't that true?
Yes, and if you know that about yourself, then you can say to your child, I've done this with my own kids. Just say, I am so exhausted, I cannot talk to you about this right now. Can I ask you about it tomorrow? And if you do that, instead of, you know, if you're not aware of what you're feeling, you might just snap at the kid, and the kid will feel like, geez, what did I do? Right? So it's a very different feeling for the child.
Yeah, they end up self-blaming because you are tired from work, and it's a vicious circle for them.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So what role then do the emotions play in our well-being? Why are they so important? And how can we learn to have a healthier relationship with our emotions?
If you think about emotions are really wired into us for a reason. Each one of them gives us a message. For example, I said earlier, anger is a message that someone has wronged you, or you feel that someone has wronged you, and that you're hurt in some way and you need to fix that or protect yourself. So anger is really telling you to protect yourself. And if you feel, for example, grief is your body telling you that you need to let go of someone or something. Anxiety, fear is telling you to protect yourself to, you know, escape. And that's not always the right thing to do, but at least your body's telling you something. So if you, like, each emotion, and I think there's a list in the book about different emotions and what each one is telling you. If you can learn to listen to what your body is telling you and respond, use it to change your situation, then that's what emotion is really meant for. And that's the best thing that you can do with emotion. Sometimes the best thing to do is just keep it to yourself. You know, I'm not saying that every emotion has to be shared and talked about or put on someone else at all. But if you can listen to it, it can make your life a lot better.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, that you can process emotions and they can change moment to moment. And it's not that everyone has to be expressed, but it needs to be acknowledged by you. Isn't that right?
Yes. And if you acknowledge the emotion and deal with it, you're much less likely to take it out on someone else or for it to come out in the wrong way at the wrong time, which emotions have a tendency to do.
Right. So how did you come up with the metaphor, which I think is wonderful, running on empty and then the solutions are filling the tank? And I think that's a hopeful in itself of that a parent, even though they've had that emotional neglect, they can refill their own tank.
Right. Yeah, the metaphor is because of the feeling of emptiness that so many people who are emotionally neglected have, which I think is really just comes from pushing away your emotional self. If you push that down, then you feel this empty feeling inside, like something is missing, and it can make you feel like you're kind of set apart, because emotion is what really connects us to other people. It really is the fuel that really runs us in life, is our feeling. You know, if you think about it, feeling drives you, most people, to do the things that they do. It's because it's important to you. So if you don't have feelings about something, it's going to be hard to make yourself do it. So if your feelings are pushed away, you're going to feel empty. And if when you start getting back in touch with your emotion and using it, you are filling yourself up. I've been through this process with a lot of people in my practice, so the metaphor really made a lot of sense to me.
Well, that we're going to have to stop there. Janice, this is Dr. Janice Webb we're speaking with, and she has a wonderful book, Running on Empty, Overcome Your Childhood Emotional Neglect, and it helps a lot with parenting. And so where can they get Running on Empty, Dr. Webb?
It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's at a lot of bookstores or on my website.
Excellent.
EmotionalNeglect.com.
Well, thanks so much for being a guest on Family First, and good luck. I hope the book reaches a lot of people.
Thank you so much, Randy.
My pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.